So, yeah, I would like first, thank you so much for all coming here. It's a great joy again to be here and share my own experience and writings and poetry with you. So, I would start first by reading a poem which I wrote lately when I was in Poland. So I was reading, I had to spend the night in, you know, in a Greyhound bus station. I locked my things there and I wanted to take, to go for a walk to see the city at night. Day life is different from night life. So I said, this will be a good opportunity to see the night, how it is here, and to see the people and how they deal with each other. So I wrote this poem at 1:45 a.m. in the Greyhound bus station in Portland. And just right away when I finished with this, I started walking for the whole night, and there was an old African-American woman who happened to be there. I thought she is waiting for a bus, but I discovered that she is a homeless 64 years old, walking all night long. And this made me think about it, because I've never thought that there are some people like that somewhere in the States, at least, you know. We have them maybe back home in Morocco, but still people help each other, you know, they find a way. So this touched me deep inside. So I would like to start, you know, by reading this poem, which I called Kerouacan Epiphanies in Portland Greyhound Bus Station. It seems that the inception of sentimental states is unchangeably similar. Dear clients, I shall seize the opportunity to canalize these feelings, especially to those sitting somewhere on bus station benches, unexpectedly waiting for trains or buses bound to nowhere. I would love to desperately inform you, I reckon I have never visited Finland. Actually, I probably never should visit Finland, since it's a place I love so much on paperbacks I bought from Paul's Books with my working class dimes. It turned out I am visiting 21st century American dream. Now that I'm sitting in this Greyhound bus station, not because I'm expecting a girlfriend's heart to revisit, not because I'm picking up my grandmother's leather suitcases, not because I am bound to meet a Rockefeller businessman, not because I am solitarily taking 8:30 train to Eugene, it is because I whimsically remember Jack in his French beret. It is because 50s-style Cadillac car smoke gets into my myopic eyes. It is because my ears picked Born to be Wild on the entrance to Portland Central Station. It is because I imagined again Jack's mother weeping in front of her Madonna icons. It is because I ventured into the epiphanies of the varieties of religious experience. It is in Portland where everybody leisurely rode their fanciful organic bikes. In Portland where the deer leap and trips through when you plant roses. In Portland where blonde girls walk in their vegan underwear late in the evening. In Portland, where gays and lesbians read their battered copies of Gender Trouble. In Portland, where Columbia and Willamette rivers erotically confluence. In Portland, where nouveau riche American couples have two types of tap waters. I walked in distress when I saw old and young homeless pass out on hard floors. What would Kerouac say in this postmodern Greyhound bus station? Shall he say again, the floors of bus stations are the same all over the country? Shall he say again, they are always covered with butts and spit? Shall he say again, they give a feeling of sadness that only bus stations have? Shall he say again, the trip was an ordinary bus trip with crying babies and hot sun? I shall not dwell in memoriam of anything celebrating funhouse, mirror, reflection of Portlandia. I shall not join Portlandia's cage-free, organic and fresh satire on Mississippi Avenue. I shall lead the road and fold in a series of joyful epiphanies in truck stops, Greyhound bus station. I shall stare through the early evening windows of jazz. This shall be my love letter to the great American landscapes I lift somewhere in Iowa, Ohio, and Indiana. I shall be too busy for feeling love relationship scruples. I shall just allow my muscles a space to twitch, to live the ragged joy and go. I shall just sit in the Greyhound bus station and think everything over. So, thank you. So yeah, so this was the poem, and most of my own writings are inspired by such situations when I travel, and something touches my or just blows my mind, you know, bouleversé, like, you know, blow my mind, my feelings and everything, and I react to it in such a way. So almost all my poems are this kind of sincere, maybe a reaction feelings. This is the way I write. So today I would like just to talk about what I am interested in and the kind of work that I'm doing. So I became interested in the beats when I was in my last year in high school, because I always felt that I am in so many ways rebellious, revolutionary, and I wanted to change the state of affairs, of things, you know, how it is in my home country. I come from like the native people of Morocco, the Berbers, and we have been undermined in so many ways. So I wanted to subvert this situation as much as I can, and I thought maybe the beats and the transcendentalists before them did such a great job by, you know, subverting the American and the mainstream and status quo thing. So what I did is I went back to the beats and I started reading their poetry, and I liked so much their own involvement with civil rights movements and how they totally immersed themselves in what was going on in the 60s, you know, 50s, and later on in the 70s. And I discovered that Allen Ginsberg's poetry, in so many ways, maybe directly addresses the kind of aesthetic sensibilities that I have. So I said, I think this guy is the right person to try to translate, and especially at this particular historical critical moment that we are going through, which is the Arab Spring protest there in Africa. So this was the second topic for my PhD dissertation. It was not accepted for the master's degree. It was not accepted in the beginning, so it turned out to be my own topic for the PhD. So I worked on Ibn Arabi and George Hans Gadamer for my MA dissertation. Ibn Arabi, the Sufi, Theosophist, who lived in Andalusia. He's a Moroccan, but he spent most of his life in Andalus with other philosophers, and he went to Konya in Turkey. He met Rumi, and then he spent some time there with Rumi, and they discussed. He has left some letters and things about his own life there. So I applied for a PhD program at the University of Mohammed Khamis V in Rabat, and they accepted this project. So what I'm basically trying to do is look at the aspects, facets of influence, similarities between the beats, who influenced the other, and for what reasons, or how would the Moroccan people would react to the beats if they know that most of them are homosexuals. So I am not interested in gender trouble. I am not interested in any kind of categorizations of what is good and bad. I am more interested in their own subversive, maybe, spirit. The way they were against the mainstream. The way they were against the status quo. So my dissertation is they encounter, I think, a provisional kind of title is they encounter between culture encounter between Moroccan writers of late 50s, 60s, and the Bay Generation writers. Social and conventionality, hobo reclusions, and cultural agency in the writings of Muhammad Shukri, Muhammad Mrab, Jack Kerouac, and William S. Burroughs. Of course, other people. So I'm interested basically in trying to translate their work, especially poetry, because I think that the spoken word and the written word is very influential in so many ways. It changes the way we think, and it changes certain deeply rooted principles of what is good and what is bad. So I thought Ginsberg is the right person, and I started translating his own poetry. So I translated so far, I think 30 pages now, and I started by translating Howl, but Howl would be the last maybe thing because it's a very phenomenal kind of a work. So I translated other poems there. Okay, I translated other poems which were more kind of direct and short, and I postponed this translation of Howl until the end because I think it is the epitome of his own work. So of course there are great kind of hindrances if you are trying to bring this to Morocco. Though I still believe that Morocco is still one of the best, maybe liberal, progressive countries in North Africa. So we tend to live together in the same community, like Jews, Christians, Muslims, Berbers, and other people from all over the world, foreign people. And we accept all these differences with slight nuances. So I was thinking this critical historical moment is the right time to bring all these people so as to contribute to the movement, the protests, through the spoken word. I am interested more in translating this poetry because it helps so much to raise the consciousness of the people, especially the young people. We have been taught things like 19th century romantic poetry and so on, and we've been living in this idealistic world for maybe decades, since the 60s. Nothing from the counterculture movement found its way to our own official university programs and curriculum. And as a PhD student, and as someone who works also part-time at the university of my hometown, Agadir, I always try to bring something new, which is countercultural. And I managed to teach a course last semester on the countercultural movements, and that was the first opportunity for me to introduce these people. So none of my professors ever taught me the countercultural poetry, like the Beats or anyone. So this has been done just as a personal, through my personal effort and my interest in trying to change maybe the scale of certain things, thinking in terms of binary positions, what is good, the good, the bad, the Muslim and the other, maybe the Arab and the other. So I was always trying to bring all these two different components of the same category in total unison, coherence, exchange, and I believe that this poetry will do so much because the Beats, as we all know, have been very tolerant towards the other people. They were homosexuals, they were lesbians, they were Muslims, maybe Amir Baraka, later on maybe he was thinking about Muslims and then Malcolm X and other people. So, and you have the Buddhists and you have the Jews, and so regardless of their own traditions, their own belonging to a particular set of mind, cultural stance, they were interested in finding a way to at least establish a society or a community where all the people have freedom to do what they like and what they want. So in Morocco, in the 60s, that's the decade, post-independence decade. So I was trying to look at why did not the Moroccan poets and artists and writers did not adopt this countercultural spirit, which was the zeitgeist of that, you know, that particular historical movement. And I found maybe one more kind of logical reason why they didn't adopt or react to or incorporate this counterculture movement in their own writings. It's because we have been under the French occupation for 50 years or even earlier. So the protectorate, whatever they call it, started in 1912 officially, and we got our own independence in 1956, 57. That's when my father was exactly born. So I thought this post-independence era was most of all a critical period in our own history, and it was basically the moment when nationalists started to build the country. So instead of trying to draw the attention of the people to something which is countercultural, they wanted to focus on a post-independence construction building of the country. That's why they did not at all allow any kind of counterculture movements to get into the cultural scene of Morocco. So they were nationalist poets, people who wrote poetry for the sake of uniting, bringing people together for the sake of spreading this sense of patriotism. So they wanted to try to, in fact, put an end to all the kind of cultural differences and antagonistic feelings which the French wanted to maybe infuse in our own culture during the 50s and 40s. If you read the Moroccan history, there's a part of it which is about how France tried to create a segregation kind of between the Berbers and the Arabs. They had this very famous decree which is called the Ad-Dahir al-Barbari, which is the Berber decree, in which they tried to create schools where Berbers and Arabs are separate so that they can really create these clashes between the Berbers and Arabs. And they call it Siyasat Farriq Tasud. Okay, Farriq, which means like the separate, and then you, there is even that in English, so separate and then you become more powerful. So they wanted to create this confusion in our own society. Anyways, this is one reason why not the Moroccan people, artists and the writers and culture activists did not turn to the beat or counterculture movements at that time. They were more interested in building the country and they wrote nationalist poetry. So all the people were at that time very happy, of course. You know, it's post-independence era. They wanted all of them to be free. They wanted all of them to have access to education and so on. But Hassan II, little by little, he moved from what the people wanted to, what people had in their own minds, what they expected, you know, from his own succession to a throne. His grandfather was a good guy, but his own son turned out to be the opposite of his father. So when people started to adopt communist, you know, ideas from, let's say, from France, you know, there was the great student revolution in 1968. Moroccans went to study in the Latin Quarter, Hey Latini, in Paris. They spent so much time there, and they got infused with these communist ideas, and they wanted to bring them back to Morocco, and it is a monarchy. So the king, in so many ways, undermined all the subversive voices of the people who wanted to change the monarchy to a more kind of liberal, progressive political system. So this is also one possible way why the beat generation literature and aesthetic sensibilities did not find their way to Moroccan cultural scene. So this has been a kind of aborted by the king and his own entourage, you know, the people who work with him in the palace.